What's up, everybody, and welcome to 305 Radio, a part of 305 Magazine on MiamiUndergroundRadio.com. I want to first introduce my co-host.
What up? This is Struck, 305 Magazine. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great. And
excellent.
I want to welcome our special guest. Go ahead.
Listen up. I don't know if you know about this, or if you guys are old enough, but 305 Magazine came out in 2006 or something like that. But way before that, there were a few zines, but the OG of all zines is here. The Cypher was a magazine, the Cypher magazine. Now it's Cypher the Book, a history of hip hop in Miami. And here we have the author, George, John, my bad, I'm just caught up in this. John Oben Cordero. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. What up, everyone out there tuning in, 305 Radio. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir.
Definitely. John, do me a favor and tell us and our audience a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do.
Well, my name is John Cordero, a.k.a. Omen. I am a 305 hip-hop head. I moved down here to Miami back in 95, mid-90s, and it was a totally different era. What I did back then was just document what was going on in the scene, and in 98, got together with a few other friends and we put together the Cypher Miami Hip Hop newspaper. It was a free publication that chronicled and kept up with the scene, what was going on at the time. It ran for 2 years. And after that, pretty much took a hiatus until just recently. Well, it was a lot of work before that. About 3 years took me to write the book. Yeah. The book was released last December. The book chronicles and gathers all the best of each issue. There were about 14 issues total of the Cypher newspaper. So not only do you get like the greatest hits, you also get my own personal story as a Miami hip hop head growing up in the mid-90s until the 2000, which is the time frame the book covers.
All right, Tom. John, we have so many questions for you.
Tom, good stuff.
Before I move on though, why Omen? Why do they call you Omen?
Omen, it's just, you know, you're out there hanging out with your boys in high school and you're starting with the graffiti and the tagging, and it was basically just a tag that I took from the movie, The Omen. I really like that movie.
Are you trying to tell us something, Omen?
Yeah, no, I am not the Antichrist, for the record. Basically, the word Omen itself, aside from the movie, it means in the dictionary something that is to come in the future, kind of like a warning or a... another word I can't synonym escapes me right now, but yes, basically an omen is type of
it's a bad prophecy,
right? A prophecy, a guess or something of what is going to happen in the future. So that was I was always future forward, future looking, and trying to move up to the next level. So that's basically the science behind omen.
Okay. Well, you said you had started developing this many, many years ago, starting off with the magazine in the early 90s. But how long have you actually been writing? Did you write before that, or was it in that period of time that it just came about?
Yeah, I started writing. There's two kinds of writing. We were just talking about that off air before. There's the classic regular writing, pen to paper, pen to a pad, and there's graffiti writing. So people say writing, and when it comes to hip-hop, there's two different meanings. I did both, actually. Writing, graffiti, I guess is how I started. You know, just little toy stuff, tagging, bombing, whatever. I wasn't no big time, you know, big artist or anything like that. But then I didn't keep up with it because I started writing pen to pad, the traditional writing.
Okay.
And so I started going to Miami-Dade for journalism, and that's how I got the idea. My main thing was I used to be a real big fan of the magazines that were out back then, the Source, Rap Pages, Rap Sheet, Herb, etc. I was a fiend. Like, I used to read these magazines every month. And that's what motivated me. One of the main reasons for starting the Cypher newspaper was these magazines, even though I loved them to death, they weren't reflecting what was going on in Miami. Miami was totally ignored. And so that was the spark that made us want to say, hey, it's time to document what's going on in Miami. Since nobody else is, we're going to do it ourselves.
All right. Well, going back to that era, the 90s, specifically here in Miami, who were your biggest influences when it comes to hip-hop during that time?
I would say, first, when I first moved to Miami, I lived in Westchester on 87th Ave. Right down the street from where I lived, there was, next to the Mall of the Americas, The Malibu Pennant. Malibu Pennant was a big-time graffiti
the open air
gallery. Still famous.
Still famous.
All real heads know about Malibu Pennant and other larger pennants, but Malibu was the one I lived closest to. So I would walk there and just be blown away by all the artists, all the graffiti that was being done, Inkheads, Damn Crew, BSK Crew,
tell
SG, FS, on and on, so many crews, so many writers, and so that was one of the main things, that just seeing the culture of graffiti being there literally 5 blocks away from my house.
Shout out to all those crews, but
yeah, that's what's up.
Real heads know. Other than that, again, with the hip-hop side of things, there were two radio shows that were so influential and so legendary. The Saturday Night Fun Box on WDNA.
Oh, man.
The Hip-Hop Shop on WVUM. And these were shows that came out every week, one on Thursday night, one on Saturday night, and you just had to be there. This was pre-streaming, mm-hmm. This was pre-Spotify. So if you missed the show, you missed out, and you just had to pray that one of your homeboys taped the,
uh-huh.
And you could borrow that tape.
Yeah.
But as for me, I was always there with my tape, but pressing record, and, you know, just storing and collecting all these shows that were, wow, I mean, local heads, all the hot records at the time, Rhythm Rocker, shout out Rhythm Rocker, he was very influential in the community,
yeah.
Not only as a radio host, but as a community activist, and so that was another aspect, those two radio shows, the graffiti, and one last aspect for me that influenced me a lot was the Universal Zulu Nation, Miami chapter, shout out Zulu King Image, he was the one that brought me in, and, you know, it was an organization dedicated to hip-hop, to knowledge, to positivity. And again, it was just everything happening all together. Hoodstock Festival, Zulu meetings, The Gates, one of the first hip hop clubs on the beach.
You're DJ saying Craze. This, and it's like all coming back.
I'm
like
telling
nostalgia,
you.
Nostalgia, like
right.
The smells, you know, like you're totally
the
taking there.
Fumes,
yeah,
yes.
Like everything.
Yeah, those were the seeds, man. Those were the seeds for me. I was a JIT, you know, this was what I grew up with, and this was just it was a daily operation for me. It was just a way of life.
So what is this book, The Cypher?
The Cypher.
What a name, huh?
The Cypher.
What does this book really mean to you, personally?
It captures a moment in time in Miami history that not a lot of people nowadays, the new generation necessarily might not know. I mean, obviously, they weren't around back then, but other than that, it hasn't been documented in a way I feel that is not only respectful to the legends that came before us, but just the scene itself. I mean, nowadays, you know, you have guys like DJ Khaled. The whole world knows DJ Khaled. Does the whole world know that DJ Khaled started on an illegal pirate radio station here in Miami? You know,
yep.
Things like that. The pirate radio scene was another big, big influence. These were things that we took for granted back then, that we thought was just going to be around forever. We were young. And, you know, when you're young, that's your mentality. And now you look back and it's like, man, we had 10 different radio stations on the dial at any moment during the day. And, you know, those things are gone now. You know, everything's digital now. And that's fine. Progress, you know, life is about evolution. But, again, the book just captures a moment in time before the internet, before social media, before the computers even. And it was basically a scene was so thick and so strong that I feel it needed to be acknowledged to show the next generation who these guys were that planted these seeds to what Miami is today.
Well, I'm very happy and grateful that you decided to create this, especially for Miami, to preserve that part of the culture and that history that I think you're absolutely right is kind of fading in a sense. I say this only because I met some young children, under teens. Well, they were in their teens. They were like 12 and 13, and they had no idea who Tupac and Biggie were. And I mean, you're talking about this and it seems like just yesterday, and I know, you know, quite some time has passed.
Right.
But to me, it's like, how can you not know who Tupac and Biggie is? And a lot of people within the next generations, because I feel I was kind of like the last generation to catch that wave of like that hip hop
mm-hmm.
era.
Right.
It's very slowly but surely kind of fading away, especially with these new generations. So that brings me to the next question that I had for you is, what's your take on the differences between the scene, especially relating to hip-hop, here in Miami in comparison from those times in the 90s to what it is right now?
Right. I think back then, everybody was just new jacks. I mean, we had no idea when we started the paper. We had no funding. We had no investors. We didn't know what we were doing. We just wanted to put something out. And it was making it up as we went along. And that was the same thing in the scene in general. I mean, guys were putting out independent records, trying to get signed. They weren't getting signed, so they just let's put out the music. Mm-hmm. DJs were putting out mixtapes, you know, and it was just something that was developing organically in the streets, in the bedrooms, you know, in the studios, and it just started growing larger and larger when the industry expanded in Miami. There was a time in Miami that to see a hip-hop show was like almost a miracle. Yeah. They didn't take place often, so whenever an artist came down to perform, I'm talking like in 94, 95, you saw everybody that was into
crazy.
Hip-hop. And that's the only time you would see them because, you know, people were spread out, people need cars, you know, some of us didn't have cars back then, etc. But, you know, it was something, it was a gathering of everybody that was in the scene. And then obviously as the scene expanded, you know, things, some money came in, people were able to blow up off their talents and whatnot. But that's the main difference, you know, back then we were just really making it up. We were, some of us obviously knew other things better than others, some of us didn't know anything. But, you know, nowadays the blueprint is there. It's like everything's online. Now you just know what to do with your YouTube campaigns.
At a click of a button, right?
Campaigns, yeah. Exactly. Your hashtags and your analytics. And it's all been done. It's all there for you. You know, you can literally Google how to get a record on Spotify. And they will tell you step by step how to do that. Back then, we didn't have that. It was like, put out vinyl, give it to Rhythm Rocker, and see if he plays it.
Make a tape or make a CD,
yeah.
And whatever.
Put it at
was.
The Flavor Station, at the Backway, you know, the Checkpoint. These were the stores that
Backway.
Were around back then.
Well, we were talking about even promotions for the nightclubs and the nightlife.
Right.
We had like teams of
yes.
street promoters
right.
that would yeah. be divided, and it was like 30 by, you know,
right.
every, I don't know, what area. And they would literally go on foot handing out
yeah.
flyers, putting
yeah.
posters up. And
yeah.
now all you have to do is create a pretty little flyer, put it on, you know, one social media, and that's
yeah.
it. It's
you
like
don't even
got to
print it.
Place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it cut down on your printing costs, basically. I talk about that in the book, the whole street team phenomenon. That was something that was a moment in time. And,
yeah.
you know, the technology came along, and, you know, now you just put it on Instagram. Same with the music. Like, they used to give out free records in the beach to the DJs. MP3s came along and all that went away. Now the radio the rec labels will just email MP3s to the radio stations. So who needs a record promoter guy? Who needs a street promoter guy, right? But yeah, back then it was just like everything was brand new. You know, everything was fresh, everything was new, and you know you went around the beach and you came home with a stack of flyers, like, you know,
yeah.
2 inches thick, because everybody was just hand in hand. Yeah. So nowadays, you know, it's different, but everybody has a phone in their hand, so it's pretty much like getting a flyer back in the day in your hand. You got your flyer with you all the time. You just got to go on Instagram.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about, you know, the past and the history of hip-hop, and presently we have you sitting here sharing this wonderful book that you've created for us that will definitely stand the test of time, I'm sure. What do you see in the future for hip-hop, especially here in Miami?
I mean, I ended the book on that note that there's always going to be some kid in some bedroom somewhere in Miami that's going to be creating, you know, the next wave, the next new hot record, the next new hot mixtape, whatever. It's life's about progression, you know. We don't know who the next big artist out of Miami is. He's out there, he or she, they're out there, and, you know, we will hear from them soon enough. So I think the talent is there. It's always been there. So I'm not like worried about like, oh, who's gonna next to blow, whatever. It's gonna happen. And Miami's always had talent. I'm talking going back to the 80s and, you know, the 90s, especially, you know, the era we came up in. So the talent is just progressing. And, you know, now we have the new sound. A lot of people, some people complain, oh, the mumble rap and the trap and, you know, mm-hmm. it's whatever.
It's growing on me.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie.
Cardi B, I love Cardi B.
I mean, but look at the music we were listening to, man. Like, Two Live Crew.
Yeah, like,
come on.
People want to say mumble rap, and then I always bring this up, like, okay, what was Bone Thugs when they came out with Thuggish Ruggish? We didn't know what the hell they were saying, you know? What was Das FX when, you know, they want FX? The miggity, diggity, diggity, you know, style. And Fushnikins, they were riding,
Jesus.
You know, 1,000 miles a minute. So it's always, you know, and back then it was like, some people complained, and they're like, oh, the Onyx, you know, the
mm-hmm.
shout rapping. You know, so there's always been, it's just evolution, like, and I don't particularly diss it. It might not be my cup of tea. I don't listen to it all day, you know, the new, like, trap or whatever, but I can dig it, and it's just something, the next sound is going to come, and we'll see, you know?
But do you think that there is a future for hip-hop?
Yes, definitely, 100%. I mean, like I said, there's always new blood, there's new talent. You know, it's just like the Discovery Channel, the Animal Kingdom, you know, the new they come in and they overtake the old, and you know,
the circle of life.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
It's a circle of life all of a sudden.
Jungle out here, you know.
Do you have any questions?
I mean, I thought it was getting me. I thought y'all was just gonna sit back and watch at this point. But yeah, man, I got a lot of questions for you, John. I mean, shit, you've been doing this quite some time. So bringing it back, two questions: what got you guys started? Like, who said we're doing this?
Right.
And what made you stop?
Right, yeah, very, very good questions, both of them. All credit for the first question, it's the beginnings, the genesis. All credit due to Christina Solana, who was at the time, back then, part of this crew out of Kendall called Planet Eros Productions. Some of you might know Godfrey from Gamertag Radio.
Godfrey, yeah. Shout out to Godfrey.
Shout out to my live stream, and okay. He says shout out to
Shout out Godfrey, yeah.
Yo, we're going to have Godfrey here next week.
All right, there you go. Yeah, there you go. Planet Eros Productions, you know. Check out the documentary. The Gamertag documentary was real.
Yes,
dope.
It is so dope.
Yeah, there's a little tidbit. He's got the historical footage in there. But yeah, she was part of that crew, Planet Productions, and so I was in another crew called 360 Productions. We were just, you know, after the Zulu Nation, there was a disbanding of the Miami chapter around '97 time frame. So then, you know, we were just hip hop heads. Like, okay, well, let's do something for ourselves. Started up different crews and all that. So anyway, one day in 360, we get this newsletter and saying they want to put out a Miami hip hop newsletter. So I already had the idea of wanting to do something because the one magazine I had seen before was Free Ground Magazine. Mm-hmm. And that was, I only saw one copy ever and I never saw one again. And this was a magazine that chronicled Miami hip hop. The magazine I saw had Mother Superior on the cover.
Dope.
They had Karis One interview by the Rhythm Rocker. They had photos of shows at Studio 183. And
damn.
So, you know, that's what I wanted, like a magazine like that was about Miami hip hop. Free Ground, I don't know what happened. I never saw one again, like I said. So I got the newsletter from Planet Earth Productions and I contacted them like, yeah, I'm down, let's do it. And then from there, me and Christina started talking and it's like, okay, let's go beyond a newsletter and put out an actual product, a magazine. And that's how the first issue came about.
That is dope.
Just wanting, at the time, 98, actually 20 years ago, to this day, March 98 was the first issue of The Cypher.
Wow.
So yeah, happy 20th anniversary.
Holy shit.
Happy 20th.
And you're here. That's what's up.
Straight up.
Round of applause.
Now we're talking.
Thank you. So yes, exactly, at 98, so, you know, this was the Juvenile, Cash Money, The Lox, DMX, those were the big hot records at the time, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, The Source, all the other magazines, Rap City, video shows, etc. They're already talking about this. I mean, they're all over the radio. By this time, hip-hop is very commercial. I mean, we talk commercial hip-hop now. It was already commercial back then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to say, okay, let's let all the other magazines handle, you know, the big artists. We're going to focus on Miami artists, and we're going to focus on the underground movement. Back then, there was also the whole, what we call now, backpacker era.
Yeah.
The Ruckus Records, the indie, you know.
Tell them.
Yeah. So, you know, it was something.
That's spitting knowledge.
No, is that, look, no, look. I was on Street Teams.
Right.
I was on that Ruckus bandwagon. Yo, forget about it, man.
Yeah, so, you know, there was a split. There was, in Miami, there was a split. There was the Jiggy crowd, the South Beach
yeah.
club crowd. I mean,
yeah.
The clubs were on and popping. And then it was the underground crowd. There was the hip-hop element, Keep It Real, the culture, the four elements. So those two scenes were kind of battling each other. The Jiggy crowd was larger. I mean, numbers don't lie. The clubs were making money. And
yeah.
The underground crowd was more like, yo, Keep It Real and all that. So we wanted to be a balance between both. We didn't want to take sides. I personally was company flow and hieroglyphics all day.
Hell yeah.
But I didn't want to have a paper GP just all about that.
You can't.
So we wanted to have a balance. So the first issue was like, we had DJ Khaled, we had B-Girl Beta, we had Pito, you know, trying to cover all the four elements. And after that, so the paper started progressing, then, you know, it went from an underground thing to we started getting recognition. At first, we go to the club, they're like, who are you? Get out of here. A year later, we're like VIP, straight up, you know, like
that's awesome.
Come right in, sir. And,
how things,
you know,
change.
That is awesome.
Yeah, you know, and that's just the natural way of things. When nobody knows you, then it's like,
mm-hmm.
you know, get out of here. And then later, when the whole city's reading the newspaper, then it's like, yes, right this way, sir. You know, so it was that kind of thing. It happened really fast. Like I said, the paper ran for 2 years. So then getting to your second question about the ending, we were young, we were kids, we had no business knowledge, no business experience. We were trying to run a business, but it started, we didn't have a business plan. We didn't even know what a business plan was. Mm-hmm. And we were also in college. We were living at home. We were working regular, you know, rinky-dink, 9-to-5 job. I was working at Specs at the time.
Specs.
Yeah, that was one of the greatest jobs I ever had.
I'm with you.
I mean, you know, get out of midnight and just walk straight to Club Cream or Club Zen, and that was just beautiful.
Zen.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Specs is now a Walgreens.
So this guy's taking me way back.
Yeah, the Specs I used to work at is now the Walgreens on 5th and Collins, just so you know.
Damn.
Yeah, thanks 23s. But yeah, so not only me, but the staff, right? Mm-hmm. So Christina, other writers, graphic designers, you know, kids, we're all 20, 21 years old, we're all in school, we're all working, we're all living at home, etc. So anyway, so all those factors came in, and of course, there were a lot of personality conflicts, there were clashes, there were fights, there were arguments. I want to cover this guy, I want to cover this artist, no, I don't want to put this, no, do that. It degenerated into passive-aggressive, I'm not going to return your call, I'll call you when I feel like it. Mm. You know, meanwhile, we got deadlines, we got people paying us. The paper was free because it was sponsored, right? Mm-hmm. We had advertisers that would give us money, so, and we'd take that money and give it to the printer, and from there we distribute. So we weren't making any money, and we didn't care about money. We were doing it for the love. Again, we were 20 years old. We didn't have any bills, basically, or whatever, responsibilities. So the money was being given to us and said, okay, we got people waiting, and you know what's going on. Meanwhile, we're fighting over whose article is going to be in, whose drawing, whose poem, you know, things like that. And then it just degenerated, came to a head. So Christina resigned, and she, you know, it was a big ordeal for us. After she left, I ran the paper for basically another 6 issues, and then burnout. I mean, that's basically the bottom line. Just, you know, like I said, trying to do 4 things at once. Mm. The story's in the book, so if you haven't read the book, you'll get a little more detail insight, because I also put my personal stories in there of what was going on behind the scenes. But yeah, pretty much burnout, fighting, immaturity, really, you know, being kids, trying to be Mr. Know-It-All, you know, maybe conflict of clash of different personalities that don't get along for whatever reason. So, you know, all of that mixed into, you know, one pot, and that's what led to the
demise,
the end.
So we're halfway through the show. So for those of you that are tuning in, we have John Omen Cordero, author of The Cipher. Can you let everybody know where they can find you on social media, where they can find the book, where it's being sold?
Of course. My social media you can find at Omen305, Instagram, Twitter, and then there's also a book Instagram, TheCipherBook_Miami. It's just for book promotion. As far as getting physical copies, I would say good luck, because it's pretty much sold out at this point. I believe there's still some left over at 1-800-LUCKY, at Hustleman Gallery, and one more that escapes.
Okay, but wait, I know you have some on reserve for the...
I mean, can I buy one off you today?
Yes,
for real.
Two heads.
I'll buy one off you today.
Yeah, there's also a few left on Amazon. That inventory is running really low right now, so, you know, the best bet is to get on Amazon and get your copy. But yeah, I mean, it released in December, and the response was... overwhelming. I didn't know what it was going to do. I didn't know what kind of numbers, and now it's pretty much gone. So I just want to thank everyone that, you know, copped their copy, whether online or through me personally, or at the store, Shoe Gallery, 004 Connect. They all had it, and it's pretty much gone. I just went to Shoe Gallery today, talked to Dan, and he said, no, they're sold out. So
perfect.
You know, that's just incredible to me. So again, you gotta do like Pokemon. You gotta find them all. They're out there somewhere.
It's a scavenger hunt, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's funny to hear you say that, like, you weren't expecting this turnout, because I was going to ask you, you know, how you want to be remembered, and clearly you definitely want to go down in the books for putting us down in the books.
I mean...
But, I mean, it's crazy that you would say, like, you weren't expecting that reaction, because what you've done is such an incredible thing, so thank you.
No, thank you. I mean, the reason I say that is because this is self-published. This is not backed by a publishing company or a corporation or anything. I did this just for self. You know, all the money came out of my pocket, and it's like you put something out and you hope it does well, but you don't really know until, you know, it's actually out there and you get the feedback from the people that are checking it out. So,
well, with that being said, I don't think you should have even said that because we went through the book ourselves.
Yeah.
And the photography that's used and the artwork that's used is phenomenal. The, you know, covers front and back are phenomenal. The content itself is so well written, and you took us through a lot of different details that a lot of people miss out when they're, you know, reminiscing on those events that took place here in Miami. So for not having anybody backing you up or any quote unquote professional help, you did an amazing job. So you guys need to go check this out, like, right now.
Yeah. No, thank you. Yes, the artwork and the layout, all credit is due to Cushy Gigs. They're the ones that did the artwork. And
shout out to Cushy.
Yeah.
Always with dope work.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Cushy Gigs took care of that, and they just went above and beyond what I expected. The hand styles in there, the photography, like you said, manipulating the images. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this stuff was very hard to find. This is... a lot of stuff wasn't online, you can't just Google. Mm-hmm. So it was my personal collection, others' personal collection that contributed. Shout out Brentstone from Path, shout out View from Below, Raj Spence, very, very helpful. Eric from, you know, Inkheads back in the day, very helpful. So, you know, just gathering recollections and collections from other heads is what made this book come alive, and Cushy Gigs took it to the next level. So as far as the writing, then yes, it was just writing, rewriting, editing, re-editing. It took me basically 3 years to get it to where I felt that it could be published.
Well, you know,
an artist's work is never done.
Ever.
But I have to admit, it's an impressive book. It is chronicling Miami. It's an era of Miami that isn't really chronicled. You know, for a little bit it is, for the little bit that it is chronicled, it doesn't go into depth. You have a crazy hood.
Right.
You said some of the clubs that I haven't heard of in years. Years.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, because...
I've forgotten about
this. When you think about...
Sometimes you want to forget.
You're right.
The evolution of a club in Miami, you know, the lifespan of any club is short-lived either way. But man, you have just... the pictures are just... it's not even that... you have old school pictures of shit that people are never going to see again.
Right.
You know, you have walls that I remember clearly. I have probably a photograph somewhere in some box in the crib. Right. But you dug out everything and everything possible. Like, shit, man. Like, it's really impressive. For those of you that are historians of Miami, you need to see this book if you really want to find out more about the city you live in. For those of you living in Miami that are listening, if you don't live in Miami, if you're out of Miami, Florida, you got to get this book. Order it online. It gives you a piece of Miami you're never going to see, even if you come over here. A tourist won't get a piece of that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I just, what made you, at the end of the day, like, what was the day you turned around and you said, you know what? I'm gonna grab all these issues and I'm gonna create one solid book for this.
Well, it was actually kind of, you know, it's kind of sad because heads that I grew up with and were covered in the paper back then and I knew personally and were friends passing away. And then when they passed away, they get the little write up in the New Times or the Herald, whatever, they do their tribute party, and then after that, it's like, that's it. I mean, that's life, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're not just going to sit here and just, and talk about the dead all the time. But, you know, they did something important. I'm talking specifically about Mike Ripa and Roll Up from Freak Station. You know, these were two heads that were very, very well-known back then, very established, very influential. And, you know, they passed away, sadly, within the last 5-6 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, so it happened. They're no longer with us. And time goes on, and then I felt like they were being forgotten. You know, the new generation's coming up, they don't know about these guys, and, you know, it's sad that's one of the sparks, but that was basically, like, I had the content, you know, I interviewed them, I knew them, so that was one of the main seeds that was, you know, let's get the book out, because heads are passing away for whatever reason. I mean, even at the National, you know, Guru, I interviewed him, you know, he's no longer with us, Five Dog, you know, we got the interview, Godfrey was there when Tribe Called Quest broke up, you know, back in 1998, and we were the first ones to get the interview, because they had just come down, and we got Five Dog, and he talked all about it, that full story's in the book. So, you know, nationally, locally, you know, things like that, Prodigy just passed, last year, so, you know, on, and then it's like, man, you know, it's sad that's what it takes. I mean, and Drink Champs talks about this a lot, you know, give them the flowers while they can still smell them. So that's kind of...
Shout out to Drink Champs.
EFN, what up? So, you know, it's like we wanna do that. And unfortunately, yeah, some of them have passed, but some of them are still here. So let's get them also in the book. I mean, we got DJ Craze, we got DJ Ross, Speedy Legs, Chilsky, you know, on and on. They're still here, so let's give them their flowers and let's put them in the book and let's talk about them and what they did and what they've contributed.
Yo, something that people are going to realize that once they get their hands on this book, yo, EFN has been doing things in Miami way before anyone else. I don't give a fuck who you are. This book proves it. I'm sorry, bro. I'm not supposed to curse. Yeah. But it's a fucking truth. DJ EFN.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that dude. He's a big inspiration, at least on my end. So to see, when I saw everything, the Crazy Hood, when Gambit.
Right.
Shout out to Garcia.
Yeah.
Crazy Hood has been around for a long time, and it's chronicled. It's dated. And it's dated.
25th anniversary.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about EFN specifically and Crazy Hood, he was one of the first, if not the first, sponsor of the Cypher. I'm talking the very first issue.
Dope.
So the Cypher would not even exist in physical form if it wasn't for Crazy Hood, because they actually put their money where their mouth was and they gave us a check. They gave us our first check.
Part of the movement.
Exactly. And, you know, again, that happens in Miami a lot. People talk a big game and, for the culture and this and that, but
who's
Crazy
Hood,
Fact.
So, you know, I can't say enough good things about EFN, because not only did he put his money where his mouth is, but, I mean, he's been there since day one, and look where he is today, and he's still going to get bigger. So, you know.
Shout out to Dream Champs.
But yeah, man, that's one of the, you know, man, I look at that book and I just start reminiscing about everything and anything, man. Like, it's just Miami old school. I love that you grabbed a chunk of it and put it, you made it a piece of art, man.
Right. No, thank you. I'm glad you said the word chunk, because, you know, some feedback I've got from other heads is like, oh, you didn't put me in, you didn't put my crew in, you didn't put, I did this, I did that. It's like, my man, I clearly stated in the book that I got here in 95, so if it happened before 95, I wasn't here. I'm sorry. But no, I'm not being negative. I'm just saying, just straight up facts. But other than that, like, I want to acknowledge, I mean, we got the Miami Hip Hop History section where Speedy and Craze and Raw talk about hip hop in Miami in the 80s. You know, that I wasn't here. A lot of us weren't even born yet. But, you know, it's not this book is not the encyclopedia all encompassing history of hip hop in Miami. It's a slice.
It's a chunk of it, man.
You know, I want to read other books that came before 95. What was going on? I want to read that. You know, so you got that knowledge. I want to check it out. You know, I want to read your book. I want to see your photos. I want to see everything, because, you know, it's so much history out there, and this book is a chunk, a slice, a section of it. But there's so much more, and we want to see that.
Man, you know, and working on different projects, you start meeting different people that think that way. And that shit drives me nuts, because you think about it, you're like, I need you to put out your version.
Right, exactly.
I need to see what I didn't see.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? We lived in two different parts of the city. Show me what you saw.
Right.
You know, people don't get that. And I guess that's the support we really need from each other. Because you could say, yo, I listen to your music, I share your story online. You know, I retweet it, I repost it. You know, for some people, you know, I could see where the expectation where it would feel, you would feel justified in a way or vindicated, but it's not really much. But to have someone put their money where their mouth is, that's where it counts. You know, so it's that's what I see as supporting the movement.
Right.
You know.
I mean, I kinda get it, because, you know, I mentioned before that one of the reasons for starting the paper back then was that Miami wasn't being acknowledged in the magazines. I used to read these magazines every month without fail and nothing. There was one of them had like the Miami one page in the Source. I remember that. But so I get the feeling, you know, like, yo, you put out this book and I'm not in it and you didn't interview me and whatnot. And it's like, okay, we can do a part two. Or you can do your book. Or, you know, you can do a documentary.
Part two of the Cypher coming soon, guys.
Right. You heard it here first.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, there's other outlets now. Like, we have filmmaking, we have the written word, we have the spoken word, you know. So, we, like I said, we want to read that. And So I get where they're coming from, but like I said, I couldn't be everywhere at all times, and you know, it is what it is. I tried my best. That's all I can say.
But it's a great chunk of Miami, man.
Thank you.
It's a great chunk of Miami. I'm a big fan. I remember seeing you when I was a kid in high school. You know what I mean? So that's when, you know, I came across you online. I go, what?
Right.
And you just forget about it, man. Yeah. It's been a good ride for that. I've seen the success. You've been busy.
Yes.
You know, John stays busy, man. He's an OG here. He stayed busy. He's been doing a lot of book signings. How's your experience at Books and Books in the Arts Center?
Yeah. It was great. You know, people came out and I gave a presentation, just taking the different photos from the book on the evolution of hip hop in Miami, or from my perspective. So, you know, talking about this was going on with the graffiti thing, talked about like the Crook and Chrome saga, you know, the big scandal that happened back in 99 with them.
That was a huge.
Yeah, that was. To me, that marked a before and after when it comes to graffiti in Miami.
Mm.
And again, you can read the full story in the book with them. But before Crook and Chrome and during their era, Miami was completely destroyed. I mean, and I mean that in a good way, with graffiti. I mean, graffiti was everywhere. The whole city was bombed. Info, you know, from STV was just killing
everywhere.
Yeah.
He's still killing it. Info's everywhere. Shout out to Info.
But, you know, when the Crook and Chrome thing happened, when they got arrested, when they were in the news, and when they were held $1 million bail, Crook was, you know, after that, graffiti just took a nosedive. The pennants were demolished. That was another death blow. You know, Hialeah, Airport Pennant, Malibu, AgriPost, etc. So, you know, that was the before and after. And then the new millennium, the new technology came in, right? Then, of course, you got the internet. We got the MySpace came along. And then we got the Facebook and social media that we're in now. So, you know, it was something, of course, can't forget what Wynwood is, what Wynwood has become today.
Because of Graff.
Right, because of guys like DJ Raw, you know, that put on Hoodstock and were bringing the graffiti arts back then to paint. And now, look at Wynwood now. And so, you know, things like that. Again, progression, evolution, and, I mean, who knows? I'm of the personal belief that within 10, 15 years, Overtown and Liberty City are going to be what Wynwood is today. I mean, I'm talking gentrification, condos, you know.
I wouldn't doubt it.
The Miami, the soccer stadium is coming. You know, all those things are developing. And, you know, Wynwood back then was really a dangerous, not friendly place to go to. Wynwood was the hood. It was not, you know, what we have today. And that story is awesome. DJ Raw, you know, talks about that, you know, his contribution and all that, both positive and negative. But, you know, I would never expect when I was rolling around back then at Zulu meetings at 10 o'clock at night, watching out, you know, trying not to get jacked on 2nd Avenue, 34th Street, that Wynwood would be what it is today. You know, it's just overwhelming. Enough.
Yeah, for people that don't know, Wynwood, where they have the art, they have all the beautiful walls and murals, and you have Art Walk, delicious food trucks. Shout out to World Famous Mac. Love that fucking food truck. My bad, I said curse again, my bad. But I mean, Wynwood is just a beautiful place to go to. You have Midtown. People don't know, Wynwood was the place your favorite rapper raps about. Like, when he's talking about he's in the hood, he's watching this, jacking here, this and that, he's pretending to be in Wynwood. That's just figure, that's where you're at. Where 8 Mile was, we had our own. It was Wynwood.
Right.
That's how dangerous it was.
Yes. So, you know, going to pennants, I mean, the stories in the book, I got jacked at the Hialeah pennant along with many other people. You know, there was a trailer park right down the street, and gang members would come in and just, you know, roll up on you, and you had to go in there with the baseball bat with your crew because you had to rumble sometimes. And I was 18, and I thought I was invincible, so I went alone, no bat, no nothing. I was wearing a little gold chain, and that's it. You know, I got jacked.
So what happened to that little gold chain?
Dude caught me in a headlock and caught a bad one, you know, and that was the risk. I mean, those were the risks that you took back then. You went out to some graffiti pennant and you could get beat up, you could get jacked. You know, you went to Wynwood, same thing. So, you know, it was risky, but it was what we loved and it's what we did.
Awesome. John, and you've been a part of hip-hop for such a very long time. I mean, to the point where you're willing to die for the cause and get your little gold chain stolen for the cause.
Oh, my God.
But you've been submerged in so many different aspects of hip-hop. You've been out on the streets. You've seen how it's changed from the 90s to today. Out of those four elements of hip-hop, which is your favorite? And tell me why.
Wow, that's a really wow. I would say like my first exposure to hip hop was the movie Beat Street. I was 6 years old. My cousin took me and basically made me what I am today because that movie just, I couldn't believe like the graffiti, even though of course now we know it was all fake and whack. Come on, like Ramo, like come on, you know, it was whack. We all know it was whack. But
it's back a classic
then,
movie.
Yeah, yeah. But the graffiti in Beat Street was horrible. You know, it wasn't done by real graffiti artists. We all know that. It wasn't wild style, it's all words. But back then, watching it on the big screen like that, you were just I was just blown away. And I still remember to this day. I mean, it's one of my earliest childhood memories. So getting back to your question, I would say definitely probably the graffiti. Because graffiti encompasses everything. It's like you think anyone can do it, but it takes great skill. You know, outsiders, just, oh, vandalism, scribbling on walls and whatever. It's something, I mean, I was also talking off air, like, I did, the book starts with my story of me getting arrested for bombing in Orlando. And it was, I didn't stick with it, you know, I don't know, I got sidetracked with the other kind of writing that I spoke about, but graffiti at the time, it was everything. And you know, you just sat down and you drew and you tried to make it happen on the wall and stuff, but that was the influence that we had, watching Star Wars over and over. I pretty much know that movie by heart. I'm sure everyone, you know, also does a wild style, you know. And so graffiti is something that has taken over the world. And same thing, you know, they started back then bombing trains. And now look, it's this multi-million dollar industry, even down here in Miami. But it's just a self-expression. Same thing with the hip-hop. I was really into lyrics, you know, back then. And you know, trying to write, and it's like, man, this is really hard. You know, you don't really know how hard it is until you try to do it yourself. And you know, you hear guys like Nas, and you're like, man, like, how? You know, and it's like, some people have a gift. I mean, that's what I said. I mean, we've all heard a million rappers, and you know, we all have our favorites, our top fives, and top ten lists, and everything. But you know, there's a certain skill set that transcends. You know, like there's a million rappers, and then there's guys like Nas and Rakim, a rapper's rapper, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, Big Pun, Kool G Rap, you know,
Outkast. Razzcast.
You know what I'm saying? Exactly. So, it's same thing with the beat making. Like, there's producers and then there's DJ Premier, you know?
Yeah.
The dancers, there's a million crews and then there's like Speedy Legs and Crazy Legs, you know, guys like that. So, you know, all the elements, we all tried them, we all did them proficiently, not proficiently. We were toys, we were wax, some of us were able to transcend and become, you know, big time and all that. I remember like guys like Ease, man. When I met Ease back in the day, I was like, oh my God, this guy is the greatest. And now look, he's like this multi-million dollar famous.
So now he's really the greatest.
But you know, things like that, you never think. Like DJ Khaled was just another DJ back
yeah.
then. He was just one of many.
Now the Arab Attack.
DJ Khaled, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's those things, it's good to see, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's good to know that people stick to it and they make it happen for themselves and they don't ever give up and, you know, they progress and they do it their way.
So right now, if you had to stick to one of the four, which one would you do?
Rap.
I mean, if but you knew you'd be successful.
Damn, I don't know.
Genie's been let out the box. Genie came out and said you were going to be good at any one of these. He could break dance.
I like to expand it though because, you know, we're stuck and we think the four traditional hip hop elements, but there was always a debate that there were other elements. People used to talk about, oh, what about fashion? You know, the way we dress. What about knowledge? You know, trying to, you know, do knowledge yourself or whatever. What about entrepreneurship? You know, starting hip hop businesses, hip hop clothing lines, on and on. And designing, whatever. I mean, now you have hip hop photography. Like, now you have hip hop writers. And I guess you could put me in that category, but I don't just write about hip-hop, but even though this book is all about that, but I think I will stick with the writing element, the hands pad or keyboard nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, for me, it's easy. You know, people say, oh, man, I really dig your writing, whatever, but I just do it, you know, and that's the same thing. Like, I was talking, like, I'm not comparing myself to them, but, like, guys like Nas or whatever, you ask them, and they, oh, I just do it. They just rap,
yeah.
You know?
It's intuitive.
Yeah. Same with the graffiti artists and the DJs. You know, you talk to Craze and he just does it.
In fact,
they all practice. You know, it's not like overnight success or anything. Craze, you know, I've known him for a long time and used to go to his house and he'd be in his bedroom for like 5-6 hours straight just cutting and scratching. And that's why he's DJ Craze. You know?
Yeah.
So we gotta wrap it up pretty soon. So you're kind of going into my questions before I even ask them. But if you had any advice for our listeners, whether it be Miami related, hip hop related, anything, what would it be?
I would say if you have an idea, do it. You know, copyright Nike, but just do it. You know, sometimes, even this happened to me too, we get caught in like, oh, but I need the backing, and I need to get signed, and I need the marketing muscle, I need the money, I gotta get the bag. That's great, you know, that helps. Like, but at some point, you gotta realize that you gotta do like what Wu-Tang said, you know, bum rush the industry. And it's like asking, oh, you know, put me on, sign me, this and that. That's like a million and one. These guys, the gatekeepers in the industry, they get a million and one submissions every day. And why are you any special from the other million ones? You got to make it special yourself. And the way to do that is put it out yourself and see what the market is. You know, let the marketplace decide. The invisible hand, you know, the people are going to either dig it or not, and then you adjust accordingly. So I would say whatever idea you have, you want to make records, you want to put up a website, you want to do photography, you want to do design, you know, whatever creative gets your creative juices going, just do it. Now it's even easier. Like, you can do everything online from your bedroom. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to pay money aside from your internet bill. But, you know, it's so much easier nowadays. All the tools are there for you. So, again, just whatever idea you have, manifest it and bring it to reality.
Okay. John, so you're a writer. Are you currently writing for anything else? Are you writing on a next project?
Yes, I am working on a next project, working with DJ Raw. From Hoodstock, we're chronicling his life story. So I'm working on his biography in book form. So, you know, you see a lot of the big biographies. They're not really written by the person whose the biography is about. You know, they're advised and they're helped by actual writers. That's where I come in. Like, I'm advising and helping DJ Raw write his story. So that's the next project. We want to hopefully try to get it out before the end of this year. And yeah, I mean, DJ Raw, a legend that has so much history. I mean, he's done it all, seen it all. He's been at the top, he's been at the bottom. You know, he's been rich, he's been poor, etc. So that's what we want to do. So that's my next project that I'm working out with DJ Raw. And shout out 420 Hemp Fest, South Florida Hemp Fest. Make sure you check that out. And other than that, just, you know, freelancing here and there, you know, helping out different record companies, FDF, you know, Freedom Democracy Family Movement. Helping them out in a big way. They're the new wave in Miami, so you want to check them out as well.
That's what's up.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask you to please repeat where they can find you on social media and where they can find the book.
Of course. My social media at Omen305, numbers 305, and the book at Decipher_Miami on Instagram, and search it, keyword Decipher on Amazon, and you'll be able to find it there. And of course, your local stores down here in Miami.
Okay, and are there any shout-outs that you want to give before we go?
Oh, man, well, shout-out, of course, 305 Radio and Magazine and Struck and just, you know, everybody that's contributed to the book in any way. I've given shout-outs throughout the show, but, you know, if I forget you, I'm sorry, but, you know, just real quick, Cushy Gigs, Godfrey, Danny and Shoe Gallery, Crazy Hood, DJ Craze, just Brim. People that have helped out and contributed to the book in any way, shape, fashion, or form. My sister right here next to me, chronicling.
I was about to say, you better shout her out, man.
Definitely my family, this, you know, helped me out. My wife, Chaya, and just, you know, everybody that, of course, most importantly, everybody that actually spent their money and bought the book and read it and enjoyed it and spread the word. Word of mouth is the best form of advertising. So thank you very much, and stay tuned for the next phase of the Cypher.
John, I got to tell you, man, if there was no Cypher, I don't think I'd be into hip-hop as much, homie. So thank you very much for putting that out.
In respect to that, thank you. Thank you so much. That's really humbling, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, there's a small group of people that if you went back in time and stopped me from meeting, I'm telling you, if I would have never ran into that magazine, I would have never thought, like, it just fed into that love for the culture. And I speak for a lot of people, man. Like, we're lucky to have someone to have done that, because you look throughout hip-hop history, it creeps into your life somehow. You know what I mean? And back then, we didn't have internet, we didn't have nothing. And to run across a magazine that just fits the way you feel about life, you know what I mean, graph and all, you know, shit. You were like, yo, who's here? And you start reading about it, forget about it, man. So you, thank you for feeding the culture at an early age, man.
Thank you.
So it's definitely very, it's great to have you. I hope you come back in another episode, another show.
Yes.
Yeah, man, if you decide to break dance, you know, we'll have cameras. We'll have cameras and shit, but we're good.
That's
sale for me. But yeah, man, where can we get the shout out your IG again to make sure everyone could get to you?
At Omen305305 and at the cipherbook _ Miami.
All right, so I'm Struck 305, 305 Magazine, here with 305 Radio.
and 305 _ Brownie on the gram. I'm Dre Mom. We're going to be here at 305 Radio every Monday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So make sure you guys tune in here on MiamiUndergroundRadio.com. We got Our House coming up next. We're going to have Bam Beats in the house. We're going to be featuring a song that he did for Bodega Bams. We got some DB Cutlass coming up too. So make sure you guys keep it locked. We're going to take a quick little break before we start Our House, but make sure you guys stay tuned and keep it locked on the number one underground station, MiamiUndergroundRadio.com. Thank you guys once again for joining
us. Thanks for coming out, guys.
Thank you so much for creating this book for all of us.
Thank you for having us.